It's your Wednesday daily delivery. I am Michael Rand. Glad to be back for another day and hope everyone's having a good day out there. Really good show coming up. Tom Curran from NBC Sports Boston covers the Patriots, among other things, out there. Will join me here in just a little while to talk Vikings draft, Patriots draft. What do those two things have in common? Well, aside from the fact that they're both going to draft and they're both going to pick players next week, lot of discussion about whether the Vikings could move up to number 3, where the Patriots pick right now. Vikings have number 11 and number 23 in the first round. What would it take to move up to number 3? How realistic is that? Would the Patriots really trade, give up the possibility of taking a quarterback? Why would they do that? And what is the most likely scenario here? Tom and I will get into all of that in just a little bit. So I hope you'll stick around for that. Really good conversation with Tom Curran from NBC Sports Boston. Get to some NBA stuff at the end of the show. The play-in games in the West were last night. Some interesting outcomes there. We know the Timberwolves' full first-round schedule against Phoenix. We'll get into that in a little bit, kind of how that all breaks down. First, though, what did I miss? We got to start with the Twins. Routed again by Baltimore, 11-3 the final in Tuesday's game, 6-10 on the season now. Now, I know they've played some good teams this year, right? They played the Dodgers earlier this year. They're playing Baltimore right now. So the competition gets a little bit easier at some point here. They play the White Sox a whole bunch. A friend of mine, Tim, was reminding me of that in our group chat last night as we were kind of wondering about what is going on with this team. They play the White Sox like 7 times. And, you know, White Sox are terrible right now. So chance to get well against the White Sox. But here's the thing. Here's the thing about the Twins right now. This is a team that was supposed to be able to compete with the better teams. This isn't a team where you were like, oh, they're somewhere along the way in their rebuild. Can they tread water? Can they hope to, you know, at least beat the bad teams? That's not what this team purported to be. Maybe that's how we should have thought of this team, because listen, as Bobby Nightingale showed right before the season started, the payroll is down by more than $35 million from its highest point last year. Opening day payroll of around $126 million. They cut a lot of payroll, and there's, you know, not always a direct correlation between payroll and how you play on the field. You can field competitive teams with young players, with cheap players, cost-effective moves, things like that, but it decreases your margin for error when you don't have the guys that, you know, the guys that are big payroll guys, the pitchers especially, that are making the money, the hitters too, but the guys that are making the money, if you don't have those guys playing for you anymore, you are going to suffer. It's not that hard to see why this has been a slow start to the season. They don't have Sonny Gray. They don't have Kenta Maeda. Guess what? Their starters' ERA right now is 28th in the majors, third from the bottom. It is terrible right now. They're 2-8 with a 5.60 ERA as starters, have given up a major league worst 16 home runs as a starting staff. And again, that number probably bloated quite a bit just from the last two starts. Louis Varland and Chris Paddock, really rough starts back-to-back against Baltimore. Aside from that, it hasn't been that bad, but it hasn't been great. Pablo Lopez hasn't been quite as sharp. You know, Bailey Ober had that terrible first start. Joe Ryan's been pretty good, but then you got Varland's been struggling all year. Chris Paddock kind of, you know, fighting his way through some stuff, but still, you know, not this is not the same quality or caliber in the starting staff they're used to seeing. So, hey, no wonder that they are 28th in starters ERA. The offense, dead last in batting average right now, 195. 195. And I'd say they're a couple good games away from getting above the Mendoza line. Hooray, they could maybe get that high this early in the season. But right now, the hitting has been bad too. And guess what? You know, they just don't have the same kind of firepower. Some of that right now, of course, is injuries. Their biggest payroll guy by far, Carlos Correa, just got hurt the other day. Royce Lewis, their emotional engine, their guy who, you know, led them to those playoff wins last year, broke the playoff streak. They won that playoff series against Toronto, injured in the first game of the year. That really took the wind out of their sails. I think a lot of what's happening this year can be traced right back to that first game of the year when Royce Lewis gets hurt. But guess what? You've got to have even just a little bit of depth to get past that. And like I talked about in yesterday's show, a lot of their second-year guys haven't produced the way they want them to. Edward Julian, of course, Matt Wallner sent down to Class AAA the other day to get his swing right. Guys like Christian Vasquez, they're getting nothing from him. Haven't gotten much from Carlos Santana yet. Byron Buxton got a couple hits yesterday, but he has been struggling early on. Like a lot of guys in the lineup struggling right now. We have to know whether that's just a blip on the radar or if that's going to be a longer-term problem. Defense, their fielding percentage is fine, but they haven't made all the plays. Just haven't been as crisp as Rocco Baldelli would like them to be. At the very least, they recognize this is a problem. Rocco Baldelli pretty pointed in his comments after Tuesday's loss. That only gets you so far, but at least recognizing where you have deficiencies, which is pretty much everywhere, is a big part of trying to solve them. Here was Rocco Baldelli, an unhappy manager, after Tuesday's loss.
When you're not playing well, everything feels wrong when you're not playing well. And we're not playing good baseball. Today we weren't close to winning the game. So that, you know, there was a game a couple of days ago where we were pretty close to winning the game. And honestly, we expect to win the game and should have. And that game in Detroit is harder to deal with, I think, as a group and on an individual level than a game where you flat out get beat by the other team. None of them are easy right now. We have to play better. We simply just have to play better. And it's not, unfortunately, it's not just one thing that we have to do. You know, it'd be easy to stand up here and concisely tell you what we have to do to win and get it in one sentence and, you know, just put it out there. We have to pitch better. We have to play better defensively and play crisper, sharper baseball. And we have to have better at-bats. You know, the early part of the game today, we didn't make adjustments fast enough today. And we need to grab some leads. You know, we need to go out there prepared on the first pitch of the game to go out there and grab a lead. And that changes the game. And it feels like, I don't know what it's been, but it feels like we're behind a lot and we're behind fairly early, and it's hard to play baseball like that, and we have to really play with pride and come out here and do our jobs better. It's not good enough right now.
Listen, it's mid-April. It's too soon to go into full-blown panic mode yet. We don't want to write this team off. We've probably hopefully seen the worst of them. If they had a 6-10 stretch in June, when fewer people were, you know, paying so close attention at the start of the season, it might be different, right? You'd be grumbling, but it wouldn't be the sky is falling. You'd be like, okay, we've got sample size in, you know, behind it coming forward, things like that, to kind of smooth this all out. The biggest thing I see right now is they just don't seem competitive against the best teams, and that's what I want them to be right now. I think that's what most people want them to be. This is a team that when they left off 6 months ago, they fancied themselves a true contender in the American League. All the projections had them as a true contender in the American League, a division favorite, a team that could win playoff series like they did last year. That does not look like the team they're putting on the field right now. That's what needs to change. The eye test and the numbers have to even out. I know it's just 16 games. I know it's 1/10 of the season. It's not a large enough sample size to panic, but it is a large enough sample size to be concerned. Great to be joined today by Tom Curran from NBC Sports Boston, covers the Patriots, among other things. Tom, how are you?
Great, Michael. What's going on, my friend?
Well, it was like a few weeks ago that one of the listeners to, I think, our Access Vikings podcast suggested that we try to have you on. It was all in the midst of, you know, everybody's got draft mania, of course. They're like, can the Vikings get up to the number three pick? Would New England consider trading the number three pick? Things like that. And you're like, you got Drake May, all the Drake May connections, things like that. So I wanted to have you on to kind of get the New England perspective. Where do you sense the Patriots are a little less than a week from the draft?
Their default position, Michael, is to take a quarterback. I think when you look at the three guys who are going to be on the table with, or conceivably, there'll be two, but with the three potentials, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy, all three of them, the Patriots, wouldn't need a lot of convincing to see in a uniform and on the field for them. I think all of them have their merits, and they're actually pretty varied, but the bottom line is their default position will be to select, Now, Gerard Mayo has said publicly, and the Patriots have made clear that if an offer is so persuasive, they feel they can't turn it down, a godfather offer, that they would do that, or at least certainly consider it. What does that represent? In conversations I've had with folks around the team, it was made clear to me that that third overall pick, excuse me, the 2021 move by San Francisco,
yeah,
in which they went from 12 to 3, that yielded three number one picks, first round picks, over the course of three seasons. And it was said to me, not relative to that, but just by way of comparison, the Patriots would be seeking four. Now, that was more of a spitballing conversation, as in, hey, look, if we're doing that, we got to be looking for X. So I don't know if that's their official stance within the war room, but I think that's probably what they're doing now, Michael. And I'm sorry to prattle on here, but they're probably just unspooling. Okay. We're 8 days from the draft. What do we do if Minnesota wants to come up and they offer us this, this, and this, and we're choosing between McCarthy and May? They have to have that answer at the ready. And I think that Kevin O'Connell would have to, and the GM, whose name is escaping me at the moment.
Kwesi Adofo-Mensah,
yeah. Would have to have that fully in place so that they can make a persuasive attempt, either that or deal with Monty Austin Ford at four in the Arizona Cardinals.
Now, it sounds like they are at least in the territory where they would consider it. Why, they need a quarterback as much as anybody. Why would they even consider it? Is it just a matter of, hey, they need a lot of things, you can get a quarterback later? Is that kind of where the mindset comes in of, hey, they don't have to have their quarterback right now?
I think that people outside New England don't really appreciate how desperately horrendous they were in 2023. I mean, they were an embarrassingly bad team, arguably worse than Carolina, the only team that was less potent on offense in terms of scoring. They don't have a quarterback. They don't have a left tackle. Their best wide receiver right now, excepting KJ Osborne, but their best wide receiver right now coming back is DeMario Douglas, who was a sixth round pick out of Liberty, and he's about 5'7". They have Juju Smith-Schuster. They moved on from Devontae Parker. They brought Hunter Henry back, but he's really, again, with Austin Hooper, they don't have depth and youth at tight end. So they didn't get a tackle in free agency. They didn't get a wide receiver in free agency. So you look at a team that actually could you also use a cornerback, and it's a good cornerback draft. It's a good tackle draft. It's a good wide receiver draft. If you're a smart team, you look at yourself in the mirror and say, yeah, we'd like a quarterback, but what we're going to do is waste a year of his rookie contract, which is in many ways the most economically sound portion in any team, in professional sports for any team, and piss it away.
Right.
This guy has to watch. This guy has to get smarter. Why would you give that up to Minnesota? Well, Minnesota's further down the road. Minnesota actually has a wide receiver. Minnesota actually has an offensive system in place that the players are familiar with. So that would be my argument for trading down in general. And that has been something that I've argued many times.
If they are going to trade down, do you feel like Minnesota is the most likely partner just because of the assets Minnesota has accumulated, things like that?
Yeah, 1,000,000%. It has to be Minnesota, because if you're talking, we're not going to be satiated by anything less. And our family, see, that's the thing too. Every time I've broached the trade down scenario, as you know, it's now a much more public and interactive job.
Oh yeah.
The fan base is in an uproar. Why would you trade down? This is the only time you're going to be up there. Well, chances are pretty good. You know what? You're probably going to be up there in the top 10 again. Because get your head around the idea that the Patriots have to get back to contending for Super Bowls. And I'm like, Super Bowls? That was a once-in-a-lifetime situation that you just experienced for 20 years. It's not the norm. You go incrementally, not winning a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback in his first year. You go incrementally from 4-13 to 8-9 to 10-7 or 11-6. To then being a team that can contend for the conference championship, hopefully before your quarterback hits that second contract and you have to start throwing assets overboard and you start to bottom out on the other side. people don't realize that it's not going to be get Drake May in here, a couple of receivers, and they're going to be right back where they were. It's lunacy.
How much of what happened, you know, Mac Jones looked like he was going to be at least a good quarterback for a while. That went sideways, and it felt like it went sideways fast. How much of that was not having the right team around him, and how much of what they will do now? I know it's even get some different decision makers in the mm-hmm. in the process. Obviously, Belichick is gone, things like that. But how much of how that process plays out might inform, you know, what they might think about as far as quarterback right now?
That's a great question. With Mac Jones, they were able to get their heads around taking him at 15 when they could see the physical limitations by saying, look, he's smart as hell. He's accurate as hell. He's played in the cauldron. We know he can take tough coaching. He got it from Nick Saban. We can pop him in here and he'll understand Josh's offense, which he did, Josh McDaniels. He came in, beat out Cam Newton by a significant amount because he was just quicker, more accurate, just his aptitude was ridiculous in his rookie year. You could see the limitations in terms of the arm strength. You could see the limitations in terms of the people he was throwing to. But he had Jacoby Myers, who was a high two, low one type receiver in terms of production. Hunter Henry was very good that year. They were able to pull it together. But once Josh McDaniels left and they decided to try and reconfigure and make simpler the offense, and Bill said, look, I'm Bill Belichick. We're really good here. We're really smart. What's the worst that could happen? Well, the worst that could happen would be you would retard the progress of a first-round pick, cause him to get into a pissing war with you because he felt like he was hung out to dry, and then basically exile him, which is what Bill did from mid-2022 through the end of 2023. So they brought it on themselves, the disintegration of Mac Jones. Does Mac share in some of it? Yeah, because he eventually gagged on the poop sandwich they were trying to give him. And they said, what are you gagging for? It's people hungry out there. Finish it. So they brought it on themselves. And that's part of the reason that Bill Belichick is visiting colleges right now. It's most of the reason that Bill is not employed by an NFL team currently for the first time in 50 years.
Is Mac Jones like a cautionary tale for a team that just thinks they can plug and play a rookie quarterback, or is this just a unique situation where?
No, totally a cautionary tale. The most emphatic cautionary tale you could ever have for taking a guy who is a win with, but not win because of guy.
Yeah, good point.
And not surrounding him with the artillery. To like Jaden Daniels, you could bring Jaden Daniels in here and he might get you two or three wins with this group. Maybe they might have won more games than four last year if Jaden Daniels was here as a senior. Or whatever he is, junior. Yeah. He's a senior. But you can't have a guy who needs to drive at 10-2 and then give him no protection as they had and weak skill position players. That's why people are sweating bullets that they see J.J. McCarthy as being a similar player, and they're like, they're just going to bring J.J. McCarthy in, and he's the same guy.
Do you get a sense for who of the quarterbacks New England likes the best? Like, say, the draft. Let's say Washington goes a certain way. Does that make it less or more likely in terms of trade, not trade, in terms of who's available at three?
No, and I'm talking about this today on some of our shows. The Patriots literally can't go wrong, Mike. You can take Jaden Daniels and have an electric dual threat player who is going to help maybe even free agents gravitate towards wanting to play here. You can have Drake May and you can sell 30 years later. This is a Drew Bledsoe type pick. Big, strong, strapping, great arm, tough physically and resilient. That can easily be sold. And I believe the same thing can happen with J.J. McCarthy because he's not Mac Jones. He's a better athlete. He's faster. He's got a stronger arm. And I think the elements are there for him to succeed because they're going to foster him in a way that the Patriots decided they didn't want to do with Mac Jones anymore. So they can't go wrong. And if they trade down, Michael, well, then you're going to get Joe Alt, or you're going to get Roma Dunze, or you're going to get, you know, Olufoshanu or Michael Penix later, or Bo Nix. There's all kinds of things they can do. So they literally can't go wrong, in my estimation. from their viewpoint, I would believe that they also feel somewhat the same way. They might have preferences and leanings on those three guys, and they might kick rocks if Drake May goes second and wonder how well Jaden Daniels will play in the cold and the elements. But I think they'd be happy as hell to have any of the three.
Royal Credit Union Smart Checking Accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union Smart Checking Account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Couple more things for you, Tom Curran. Really enjoying your perspectives out in Boston area. So if you're talking about the Godfather offer, the offer that they can't refuse, what in your estimation is it? Is it four firsts? Is that what gets them there? Is it something less than that? What is it going to take?
I think you have to start talking about players. I think you have to get into that department. And, you know, here when people have the conversation, similar to what folks in Minnesota do, you try and get into the mind of the trade partner. And as I try and get into the mind of the trade partner with Minnesota, folks out here are like, well, just take Justin Jefferson. You think Justin Jefferson, who really at times, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't that psyched about the Kirk Cousins experience, and really right now is probably at wit's end in terms of saying I should be on my way to Canton at this point, and now I don't know who my quarterback is. Do you think that Justin Jefferson is going to be psyched about getting shipped cross country to New England to have Bailey Zappe and Jacoby Brissett throw to him? Or do you think Vikings fans are going to say, we just brought in a big upside guy in Drake May, but now who's he throwing to? You just took away the best toy. Wide receivers now are not byproducts of the quarterback and the protection the way they used to be. We all grew up here in New England, or at least didn't grow up. We all experienced for the last 20 years a quarterback who could make the wideouts so much better because he was just on a different plane in terms of accuracy and understanding. And he always had little elements in his offense, a third down back, a slot receiver that he could rely on, or a Hall of Fame tight end in the case of Gronk. So those pieces were in place. Would Minnesota have those pieces in place for Drake May? Or do you say, well, why would we trade Justin Jefferson when we have one of the five best receivers in the league just to bring in a guy who's a project? So I don't remember what your initial question was, but I wonder if I answered it.
You more or less did. I was basically saying, like, what is it going to take? And I will say, I think Justin Jefferson initially with Kirk Cousins had some questions. I think maybe like in the rookie season, there was some stuff that happened that I don't think was perfect, but he caught a lot of passes from Kirk Cousins. He caught a lot of touchdown passes, had a lot of big games, became the receiver he was. Like, Kirk Cousins is not a perfect quarterback, but if Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback for a really good receiver like Justin Jefferson, because he's accurate, he's on time, he will go through his reads, and he will adapt his game to get that guy the ball. So by the end, Justin Jefferson wanted Kirk Cousins to stay. Now, I think you're right, where he might be wondering what's going to happen here is what's the deal with the quarterback, but I think you're right. I don't think he would be any happier in New England, even if, and I don't get the sense that there's any unhappiness here right now. I think it's more of a, hey, what's going to happen? So I don't think,
you know,
that
what? I'm conflating the last elite receiver who was there.
Diggs.
Yes.
Diggs was not happy. And Diggs, we're a full
I have so much flying around my head.
We're a full trade behind, because now he's been traded again.
I know. But I guess to actually answer the question you posed, the three first round picks, you're not going to get a fourth. Minnesota's not going to give a fourth first round pick. Can they give a second and a third from down the road? You can't go too far into the future. There's a, you know, league bylaw against that. Or can you find a Darisaw, for instance? Again, why are you giving away great players?
Right.
But if it's first round pick, and then usually they project a future first rounder you dock around. So it's the two this year, it's next year's, and then it's Darisaw, for instance.
That's
no, I know, and that's what everyone in Minnesota is going
to
say.
But nobody ever wants to trade their own players, too.
No,
and like they want to trade the players they don't want.
Right, and then you look at these deals when they go down, right? And you're like, holy crap, they gave up that to go get Trey Lance?
Right.
And it was between Trey Lance and Mac Jones, and that's what they gave up? So it's fascinating to watch. Now, do you think that Arizona would be a more palatable trade partner and Minnesota is like, hey, any port in a storm, we'll take the leftover. We like JJ. We like Drake. I can't imagine that Minnesota wouldn't be saying, okay, that's nice, New England. You want four? That's terrific. See ya. We're talking to Monty.
Here's the hard thing for me, though, is that the conversation now that you see in a lot of the mocks is it's going to take three firsts for JJ McCarthy. And I don't know. Like the Vikings will say, and we've heard them say this, and I've talked about this with our Vikings writers too. Like if you get the pick right, nobody remembers what you gave up. You get it wrong, you're fired, and everybody remembers like Trey Lance. Now, 49ers are a little different. They got their way out of the box with Brock Purdy. Not everybody's going to do that. If you mess up this pick, everybody's going to remember, and usually it's going to result in losing your job. So I feel like three for McCarthy is a lot.
My contention is this. You can't go wrong when you have a situation like Minnesota does if you take J.J. McCarthy. Because generally, these quarterbacks don't suck because the quarterbacks unilaterally can't play. They suck because of the situation they go into.
Sure.
And I totally believe that to be the case. You look at Mac Jones went from being the best quarterback of the five in 2021 to the worst and fully unusable in 2023 because of his situation. Zach Wilson was actually unusable by the end of 2022 because of his situation. Trevor Lawrence was not a good player. You got Urban Meyer out of there. Now he's outstanding. Trey Lance, injuries, not ready. He was overdrafted for a guy who was at North Dakota State.
Yeah.
And Justin Fields would be a good player. You could stick it out with Justin Fields in Chicago, but they lucked into Williams because they made a deal.
Right.
So to me, the Minnesota Vikings would have J.J. McCarthy with his speed indoors for a large portion of the season, throwing to Justin Jefferson. And I think I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But if it's J.J. or Sam.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Because Sam got ruined in New York.
Yes.
And I actually went back and watched a bunch of Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
From the 2021, from what year did he come out? 19?
18, I want to say.
18? Yeah, after Mayfield. So I watched a bunch of his pro day, pre-draft stuff to compare it to May. So I'm like, is this Drake May and Sam Darnold? Sam Darnold. Well, it's a Minnesota podcast. I won't say it. Sam Darnold was very sloppy and very questionable.
Yeah.
As a top three pick. I mean, they had a stat as I was watching on NFL Network, the video. There was a stretch of games in his final year at USC where he had like 14 fumbles. Again, I'm going off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Some Sam Darnold guy is going to go, oh, he's crazy. It's not 14. It was 11. Whatever. He was desperately bad for a big stretch of the season. And so May McCarthy, the upshot is May McCarthy and Daniels are better than Fields, Jones, Lance, Wilson.
Which we thought was a great quarterback draft at the time, but didn't turn out to be so great. But you're saying this one's better. Last thing, I want to let you go. Gut instinct. It sounds like your gut is telling you that New England is probably going to hang on to the pick because it just doesn't make – it's not going to line up for what everybody wants, and that Minnesota's going to move up, it's going to be four or five, and that it's going to be McCarthy, not May, and that the Patriots are going to end up with May. Is that the most likely scenario in your mind?
The most likely scenario to me is, I feel it's a coin flip between May and McCarthy. That's their default. That's what the owner, I think, at 82 years old, will feel best about. There is, obviously, it's an entertainment element in Patriots fans, during the Bill Belichick era, even though it's being romanticized quite a bit now. This team is, over the last 75 games, it's won 31 of them. So people are tuning them out, and they're only brought up to deride at this juncture. I'm talking too much today. But that's the upshot, Michael, is most likely quarterback, unless it's a godfather offer of three first-round picks. And then, again, this is me projecting what I think. But it's going to be really hard to sell to your fan base that it was just the two Minnesota first-round picks this year when what San Francisco got for a player who they've already moved on from and traded was so much more.
Tom, really enjoyed getting to chat with you today. I'm very curious how this all plays out next week, as I'm sure you are as well. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck covering all this, and we'll wish ourselves the same thing, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again down the road.
Enjoy. Have a good spring when it quiets down.
All right, you too, Tom. Thanks.
See ya.
Many thanks to Tom Curran for joining me on today's show. Shout out to @NorseQB on X, formerly Twitter, of course. I still call it Twitter. Gave us the idea. It was like a month ago he asked the Access Vikings crew to have Tom Curran on the show. Made it happen for you guys on Daily Delivery today, and I don't regret it at all. He was great. He was fantastic. Got a lot of good insights. The biggest thing that I took away from that, and there was a lot to take away, the biggest thing that I hadn't really thought about is, what if the Patriots like J.J. McCarthy just as much or even more than Drake May? Tom Curran made that sound like it's a possibility, like that maybe they're choosing between Drake May and J.J. McCarthy at some point. And that's something I hadn't really considered. I'd automatically put either Jaden Daniels or Drake May into the New England bucket if they're going to take a quarterback, depending on what Washington does. That could change the dynamic. What if New England likes J.J. McCarthy enough to just flat out take him at 3? That makes life easier for the Vikings if they like Drake May more. Then you can go get him at 4 or 5. Maybe it doesn't cost quite as much, a little bit easier path to still get that guy. So pay attention to that. That was not something that was on my radar, the fact that New England could potentially bypass Drake May and take J.J. McCarthy. But it does line up with what Mel Kiper Jr. told me a few weeks ago, which is that he feels like J.J. McCarthy and Drake May are closer together as prospects than Drake May and Jaden Daniels. He's got those guys slotted in pretty clearly. Caleb Williams, then Jaden Daniels, then a little bit of a gap to Drake May, but then not as much of a gap to J.J. McCarthy. So again, we're only 8 days away. We'll find out soon enough, but interesting stuff from Tom Curran, and thank you to him again for joining me during what is obviously a busy time for all of us. Let's finish with the cooler. The Warriors are done. Done for the year, at least. Dynasty fading. We talked about that earlier in the year when they lost those games to the Wolves. You could tell that this was a desperate team trying to cling to some semblance of the past. Now, still had an okay regular season, right? In most years, they're probably in the playoffs, not the play-in. They had 45 wins. The West was just absolutely stacked. But to go down, to lose by 24, I think it was, to the Kings on Tuesday in that first play-in game, to just get knocked out right away, that tells me there's something kind of fundamentally that's just not quite clicking there. One of those things is Klay Thompson's shot. 0 points. You guys scored as many points as Klay Thompson had. 0 for 10 from the field, 0 points in the game. They just didn't have anything going. So the Kings advance. They will play the Pelicans. The Pelicans lost to the Lakers. Zion Williamson, monster game, but he was hurt at the end of that game, a little injury to Zion at the end of that game, which could play a factor into who advances to be the number 8 seed. So the winner of that Kings-Warriors game, which was the Kings, plays now the loser of Lakers-Pelicans, which was the Pelicans, to be the number 8 seed. Lakers are the 7. They will play Denver in the first round. That should be quite a matchup, interesting matchup there for sure. And, you know, you look at the Wolves, this shows you that, you know, what happens when you don't finish off the season quite as strong as you want to. They got caught and passed at the very end. If they were the 1 right now, if they had figured out a way to win 1 or 2 more games at the end of the year, hadn't blown a couple of those games, they'd be staring at the possibility of playing either a banged up Pelicans team if Zion isn't 100%, or a Kings team that also has battled injuries in the first round instead of the Suns. Now, the Suns, that's going to be an awfully tough challenge. We've talked about that already. We know the full playoff schedule now. They open Saturday. They got the 2:30 time slot, which is interesting to me. 2:30 time slot for the Suns, for the Suns-Wolves opener at Target Center. So that's game one of the series, and then obviously more to it than that. But then, you know, going from there, they play Saturday, they play Tuesday at Target Center, 7:30 start, then a couple of late games the following weekend, Friday and Sunday, the 9:30 Friday start, 8:30 Sunday start, those are local times, then back at Target Center, Tuesday the 30th, time TBA, And then Thursday, the 2nd in Phoenix, if necessary. And a game 7 would be Saturday, May 4th. So a lot to look forward to there. Phoenix, slight favorites in the overall series. Wolves, slight favorites in game 1 Saturday. Essentially, seeing this as a toss-up, even if it's a 3-6 matchup, even if Phoenix did win all three games of the matchup this season, all of them by fairly comfortable margins. Wolves have a lot to figure out between now and Saturday. We will see if they can do that, but we know the whole West, and we know how the West is going down. We know it's either going to be the Pelicans or Kings as the 8. We know it's the Lakers as the 7. We know the Wolves schedule. Now we just get to sit back, relax, and watch. That will do it for me today. I am Michael Rand. Like I said, Sarah McClellan expected to join me on Thursday's show. Wild season wraps up Thursday night, so we will talk about kind of putting a bow on, you know, the up and down year, disappointing to a large degree, but maybe a year of transition if we frame it that way, and kind of what's next for this franchise. Chris Hine should be on Friday's show to talk Timberwolves, previewing Suns versus Wolves, so that will be on Friday's show. Until then, I am Michael Rand. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Back at it again tomorrow.